Welcome to another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. So I was going through my photographs and remaining memorabilia of many, many years the other day, mostly because of the recent loss of my friend Arthur, and I ran across a clipping from the LA Times of November 24th, 1996. It has the yellow tint of nearly 30 years, 27 to be exact. I know why I saved it. I love journals. I love reading about other people's lives. Voyeurism, I suppose, depending on which definition you apply. If you mean being nosy or spying on others, no, I don't think that's my motivation. I simply love trying to see the essence of others, the soul, if you will, as best as one can on this earth, and in a journal, well, I think you might just find it there. Not perfectly, of course, because some journal writers, often famous folk of past and present, are aware that their notations of the world and their psyches will likely be seen, so the image could be molded intentionally or not. But in any journal where the person considers life in the context of history, you get this chill of excitement of getting into an inner world. You get the individual history and the history, in those cases, where the person does write with awareness of history around him or her. You get the history of the nation or the world. You find out where we are more human than otherwise, in the words of Harry Stack Sullivan, a psychologist, and you find out where each person is unique. You also find some terrific writers, many who are simply not known now, or much in the past, or they were in the past and they've been forgotten. Such was Edward Robb Ellis, Illinois-born, longtime New York dweller, which I love. Among other cities he spent his time in as a journalist, in 1995, at age 84, selected parts of his diary, which he had kept since 1927, were published. He also wrote books about the Depression, and he wrote a history of New York, which I'm dying to read. The most fascinating bit of trivia about his journal writing was that he was in the Guinness Book of Records, of World Records, as having written the longest diary at that point, 20 million words. I don't think I had looked at that little clipping I found since I had folded it up and stuffed it away. I don't remember, but at the time, I might have considered getting the diary to read, as I've done in many other cases. Thomas Merton, Sylvia Plath, John Cheever, Cardinal Newman, just to name a few. But for some reason, I never got around to getting this diary. Then, of course, at that time, you'd have to find it more at a brick-and-mortar store. The days of the easy access through Amazon had not quite yet arrived. I think that's the year after I actually got a desktop. So I guess I just didn't follow up. But having found this article this past week, I bought a used copy of the book with a twinkle of the fingers on my phone. And already, because it's really thick, I am more than halfway through it. This diary is the story of a life and of a time both before and after my birth. As a journalist, Mr. Ellis met many famous people. Eleanor Roosevelt, Harry Truman, John Dewey, Will Durant, Sinclair Lewis, Grace Kelly, Dr. Seuss, Henry Ford, and again, on and on and on. But he told stories also of ordinary people. Now totally forgotten people who, by my reading of this book, are now not totally forgotten. And somehow that gives me comfort. Ellis is, I mean he was, as he died a few years later, an astounding writer. Some of the entries are short and personal. Others are short story-like. Others are lengthy observations that could be made into a script, each of itself. He reminds us that the famous are us, just like us, except something has made their lives extraordinary. Here's a brief entry as to Henry Ford. And, you know, Henry Ford, the Model T, the car. A very, very significant man in history. And I suppose you could say Mr. Ellis cuts him down to human size, which of course he always was. Dearborn, Michigan, Friday, September 17th, 1943. I've been living a luxurious life, flying in the Admiral's plane, lodging in posh hotels, greeted by local big shots, attending a dinner given by Indiana Governor Henry F. Schricker. Now we are in Dearborn, where Henry Ford has built a naval training school. We were ushered into its library, and then in walked Ford himself. He has bad breath and blue hair. I suppose he washed his hair in a solution to enhance its whiteness, but got too much coloring in. I stood near him as we chatted, but he had nothing piquant to say, and our questions evoked little of interest. Still, it was a thrill to meet him. Now, what Mr. Ellis would do with this book is that after some entries, he would do a little paragraph of either an update or to give more context to the event about which he was writing. And this is what he said about Henry Ford. He said, "In 1951, I read an Encyclopedia Britannica article about Henry Ford that astounded me because it implied that he was nearly perfect. Having just finished reading an unauthorized biography that showed how petty, cruel, and even stupid he was at times, I challenged the encyclopedia to revise the article. And they did. To have changed an article in this encyclopedia is one of my proudest achievements." I suppose here we see this human being, Mr. Ellis, also trying to have his impact on the world. Politically, I'd say Ellis was a left-leaning Democrat. Religiously, he said he started out as an atheist and then became something of an agnostic. In those points of view of his, he and I would probably have had to agree not to talk about religion or politics, but otherwise, I would have liked to travel in this man's circles. Notwithstanding a segment like the one in Henry Ford, he often wrote with incredible pathos, particularly about ordinary people and about events like plane crashes and executions, and in particular about meeting and marrying his wife, who died, unfortunately, in 1965. So, why am I focusing on him? Aside from the fact that I wish I had known him and I think he was a brilliant writer, I am heartily recommending his book, Edward Robb Ellis: A Diary of the Century. But among many of his entries, another kind of sarcastic one caught my eye because it specifically related to religion, which is the glue of this podcast. It was about meeting and hearing Billy Graham, the late evangelist, who died only a few years ago at age 99. Ellis did not like him. He did not like him a lot. It jarred me, though, in the short tradition of my reading Mr. Ellis's journal, I appreciated, I even admired his honest expression. Whether you're hoping your journal is going to be read or not is not often the case. This entry of Mr. Ellis occurred August 29th, 1957, when Billy Graham was at a press conference at the Hotel New Yorker in New York. "I want to thank the press, television, and radio for their wonderful and splendid coverage while we've been here. It was more coverage than we expected. We did expect to get a few lines in the papers, but nothing like the headlines we've received. After all, our story is somewhat the same day after day. We're very grateful to you members of the press for the great contributions you have made." End quote. Now, Mr. Ellis says, "I thought, Billy, old boy, what you don't know is how much I resent all that free publicity we gave you, how often I've groaned when I opened the Herald Tribune and saw its standing head, 'Billy Graham says.'" Now, totally self-assured, he took his hands out of his pockets every now and then to emphasize a point with abrupt, controlled gestures at the level of his waist. Whenever he held up his right arm, his index finger extended, cameramen crowded closer to get a shot of that pose. Graham also would cross his arms over his chest and sway from side to side. In a voice so rich it sounded the way claret wine looks, he said, quote, "We are standing on the edge of a volcano in this country. Just yesterday I was speaking to the editor of one of the great papers in this city, talking about the shift in the balance of power," end quote. I thought, here we go again. Billy's going to have a political tinge to his standard pitch, fear. Quote, and this editor said he had just talked to one of the men in the Pentagon, and they were deeply concerned about the news that has come out of Russia, end quote. I knew what he meant. Intercontinental ballistic missiles. Quote, there are forces moving in all around us. The penetration of the communists goes on all the time, seemingly without halt. 48 square miles an hour are being taken over by the communists, and with this shifting balance of power, some of the little nations of the world are wondering whether they hadn't better side with the biggest power. But more than the communists, I am more concerned with moral conditions in this country. My prayer is for a spiritual revival here. We receive 8,000 letters a day from all parts of the United States. Have for 14 weeks. All of them say that they now recognize Christ. This shows a concern, a hunger on the part of millions of Americans for God. End quote. Mr. Ellis says, I thought, okay, Billy, so we agree that this nation is in spiritual crisis, but your suggested solutions are too simplistic. Quote, it is a paradox that crime and moral laxity are at low ebb, while on the other hand, there's a spiritual revival. Why do we have this revival on one hand and low morals on the other? Well, here are a couple of answers. If there are two gangs in Brooklyn and one wants peace, but fears that the other is arming for street war, then the peace-loving gang is going to arm too. When God moves, the forces of evil move too. The devil also moves. So, in the headlines we read about a spiritual renaissance and about crime. This is spiritual warfare. However, it is not a paradox. If you study the scriptures, Satan is fighting for the soul of America. I believe this with all my heart. End quote. And Mr. Ellis says, I thought, oh, please, not that. And he uses an expletive. I'm skipping a little bit now. As other reporters picked up the questioning, I sat and brooded about the copy Billy Graham had written for the United Press, especially his last line. It so happens that New York City contains more Jews than any other city in the world. Among the other reporters present, there may have been one or two who were Jewish, but they might not care to put the question I intended to ask. I was hearing nothing but mushy questions. No one present dared to challenge the evangelist. Again, I spoke up. Dr. Graham. The eagle face turned toward me. The eagle eyes bored into my eyes. This morning, I read the article you wrote for the United Press, the one to be released tomorrow. You concluded with this sentence, it is Christ or chaos. Billy Graham nodded to indicate I had quoted him correctly. Well, in speaking of Christ or chaos, went on Mr. Ellis, did you mean to exclude the God of the Jews? A gasp arose from the other members of the press. For a moment, the evangelist let his face show the shock he felt. Now his eyes seemed like the headlights of a speeding car about to run me down on a rainy road in the dark of night. Then he said firmly, the person I have given my life to was, racially, a Jew. I have dedicated my life to a Jew. I thought, no, you can't get away with that. The word Jew has to do with religion, not race. Billy, you expletive, you evaded the issue. Something about this particular exchange just caught me, kind of rattled me. I said that, that's why I'm talking about it. But other than broad generalities, I really have little knowledge of the story of Billy Graham, and so realizing that Mr. Ellis was saying rather strongly that Mr. Graham might be anti-Semitic and simplistic, or simplistic and anti-Semitic in that order, I did a quick search and review of articles about him during his career. The word about Mr. Graham is the word about any famous person of particular positions, left, right, politically, or conservative or progressive religiously, is controversial. Well, depending on who's doing the writing, Graham, an evangelical Christian, was either horribly narcissistic or saintly, a segregationist or not, a believer that all men could be saved or not. Yep, controversial and paradoxical. The worst, however, and this happened some 15 years after Mr. Ellis expressed his sharp critique, was that Graham was caught on tape saying things that were just plainly anti-Semitic. No way around that. Now, Mr. Graham, being a sinner like the rest of us, disavowed his words later in his life, and yet one can understand why such disavowals might be suspicious. I'm guessing, although I don't know there was a journal entry about it, that Mr. Ellis felt vindicated. But before I look these things up, I did have some thoughts about Ellis's and Graham's interaction described in this entry. And primary for me is that, at least on the face of the exchange, they both missed a point, maybe in some way the point. I'm a little embarrassed that I'm noting this for myself and now for you, because who the heck am I? But these are the things that did occur to me when I was reading this wonderful book, which I'm still reading and almost hope will never end. And as an ordinary person, it's something that I can't help but consider. When Mr. Ellis asked whether Mr. Graham in saying Christ or chaos was meaning to exclude the God of the Jews, my first thought was to say, Mr. Ellis, there is only one God. Billy Graham knows that, and he's the same one for the Jew as for the Christian. But to be fair to Mr. Ellis and to anyone who is atheistic or agnostic, that's something which is hard to explain. But I found myself a little annoyed that Graham, who like Catholics would have been a Trinitarian, that is, believing one God, three persons, said what he did in response, and so seemed to take the bait of the accusation of anti-Semitism, and gave an answer that, to me, could arguably give validation to the accusation. Jesus was not merely racially a Jew. He was incarnated into a family of devout Jews, and he was raised and practiced as one. Then there was the transformation he inaugurated into the new covenant based on his very person as God incarnate. I realize that this transformation, is part of the source of the debate. It was the same source of the debate in the Acts of the Apostles when Paul and Philip and Timothy and all the newly ordained presbyters, also now known as priests, were going to the known world and preaching the God-man Messiah, the fulfillment of every ancient myth into reality. I sort of agreed with Mr. Ellis. Mr. Graham seemed to have evaded the issue. The thing is that surely Mr. Graham knew and could have said there would have been no new covenant without the old. The old being the condition precedent to the new. Everyone and everything in the Old Testament was a preparation for the new. Let me be blunt and sympathetic to Mr. Graham right here. He was preaching Christ and that he be recognized as the fulfillment of God the Father's plan. And there was nothing inherently wrong with that, even if you might assertively disagree with it. It is challenging, and it is a challenge to everything that has gone before that prepared for it. But a Graham, as I said, is human, and like all of us, like Mr. Ellis himself, he was the inheritor of original sin and of the effort of the devil to scatter us, the very devil he was talking about. The interaction here is a microcosm, it seems to me, of what has happened throughout history. The effort to keep us from hearing one another, using our social contexts and predispositions against us. I've mentioned here that there are several translations I've read of the phrase by Jesus from John 6:44-51, no one comes to the Father except through me. This is one I particularly like. No one can come to me unless drawn by my Father. My job as a Christian, one who believes that Christ is the second person of the one God, is to evangelize that he be recognized by everyone, regardless of their current faith or lack thereof. That means I say it. I don't mean I stand on a corner and yell, the end is near, although maybe the end is near, but that who I am is integrally my Catholicity, or integrates my Catholicity. As to the mechanics of how the Father draws people to Jesus, I leave that to him. He'll solve the chasm of faith between the Christian and the Jew and everyone else related to Christ. I simply have to live as I believe and speak as I believe and yes, what I believe, that Catholicism is the one true faith. There's no insult in that. Evolution usually brings us to the ultimate truth. Evolution of ideas, evolution of history. What was incipient in the encounter between Mr. Ellis and Mr. Graham, or truthfully, it's always been there, it's getting worse from my observation, is that when someone says something with which you disagree, the person who said the wrong thing is made anathema. And that, of course, is the history of war, the violent kind and the cultural kind. We are hearing today in response by cries by very honest people, prophets, and ordinary folk that our morals are so declining we are dying, just exactly what Mr. Ellis thought. Oh, please, not that, expletive deleted. I did wonder whether Mr. Ellis would have been less annoyed if Mr. Graham had said, it's God or chaos. thus intercepting the opening for a debate on Christ and Christianity versus Judaism. Is it not true that spiritual warfare is going on? Some kind of mystical, some kind of visceral warfare is going on, something that makes us all terribly uncomfortable. Is that something you cannot see if you are an atheist or an agnostic, but only if you believe in either the God of the Jews or the God of Christianity, who is the same God? If you are an atheist or an agnostic, do you look at the world as being mighty fine? Or do you simply concede to the existential morass as being the portion of the brutishness of our accidentally having appeared here for all of our miserable lives? In this entry, I saw the battle that rages now. Two good men accidentally being provocateurs in a short interaction, in a battle of verbal bites in which no one won. But one thing that I feel in the core of my being is that indeed Satan is fighting for the soul of America. And right now, you know what? He's winning. And he's not fighting just for the soul of America, he's fighting for the soul of every country in the world. He's won some. He's winning here in part because that divide between people opened in that conversation with Mr. Graham and Mr. Ellis has been widened as identities are being created which separate our mutual humanity and is becoming more and more dominant. No, more and more purposefully developed. Mr. Ellis said that any solution that Mr. Graham offered was just being simplistic. I thought to myself, you know, the simple is the key. The devil, however, loves to complicate, and we fall for it every darn time. We are seeing the chaos, and we, in our positivist, humanistic way, are not making it any better. And the supernatural forces which are arrayed against us are laughing at us while we pretend that we have control of our own universe. Whatever the failings of Mr. Graham in other ways, he was right about that. And the same failings that Mr. Graham had, we all have. And we're all capable of falling for the same evils. For me, as a Catholic, history effectively culminated in Jesus Christ. And what's happening now is the same battle that occurred during the Acts of the Apostles. An acceptance or not. We're free to decide. More and more, I'm just trusting in God's mercy because he knows our weaknesses. He understands our confusion. He understands the consequences of sin because he experienced the consequences of sin, though he was without sin. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. If you're liking this program, please say so in your comments. I don't get many comments, but if you, except for one very loyal fan, but if you could also tell your friends and family about the show, it's on all the basic platforms. Podbean, of course, is the one I do my initial posting on, but it's on Amazon and on Spotify and Pandora. And I saw something else. What was the other thing I saw? I can't remember, but it's on a whole bunch of them. So you should be able to find it by just Googling Ordinary Old Catholic Me. And have a great week.